From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
An apparent call from the U.S. to reimpose the Monroe Doctrine in Latin America.
We've seen protests in a number of nations, in Bolivia, in Chile, in Colombia, and in Ecuador.
That was the U.S. Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, at a press conference at the University of Louisville in Kentucky on Monday.
Those protests reflect the character of legitimate democratic governments and democratic expression inside of their countries. But we, in the Trump administration, will continue to support countries trying to prevent Cuba and Venezuela from hijacking those protests. And we'll work with legitimate governments to prevent protests from morphing into riots and violence that don't reflect the democratic will of the people.
There are new threats against the independent countries of the Western Hemisphere from Washington. With more on that, we have our reporter from south of the border, Tony Solo, in Caracas, Venezuela, which is the object of pretty much the main thrust of the threats. Why don't you tell us what's up, Tony?
Yeah, and it's kind of an accident that I'm down here at this particular time, because a group of us that work in internet communications and political journalism on behalf of in favor of the Sandinista Front for National Liberation in Nicaragua got an invitation to come to Caracas for an international congress of communicators. And the congress is, it's actually part of a series of congresses that have been set up by the Foro Sao Paulo. For people that aren't familiar with that, the Foro Sao Paulo is a group of progressive, in particular, anti-imperialist, left-wing and revolutionary political parties, and also movements, that was founded in the early 1990s. And obviously with the events of the last 3, 4, 5 years, that body as a forum for debate by the leading political movements in Latin America that are trying to defend the interests of the impoverished majority, defend the principles, the UN principles, the United Nations principles of respect for sovereignty, non-aggression, self-determination of peoples. And obviously, any organization that's trying to do that is obviously very much an perceived as an enemy by the government of the United States and its allies around the world, in Europe, and obviously in this case in particular among the ruling elites in the respective countries of Latin America and the Caribbean. So what the Foro Sao Paulo has done is it's identified 5 or 6 key areas that they need to coordinate better on to be able to resist current attempts by the United States government and its regional allies to roll back the progressive gains that were achieved from the time our eternal Comandante Hugo Chavez Frias became president of Venezuela back in 1998, and the most recent, the progressive gains took place between the time that Chavez took office in 1998 and something around, and really his death in 2013, which most people that I'm in touch with regard as a murder, yet another CIA murder.
Well, it's certainly a widespread belief with an awful lot of history to depend on to back it up, for sure.
Yeah. So all the progressive gains that were made in that period are now under threat, and to some extent have been rolled back by the current U.S. offensive in tandem with its regional allies. And they, while they, in one or two cases, they've been able to fool people into voting for their right-wing agenda, like they did in Argentina in 2015.
Right.
But that ended in very much in tears for the Argentinian right wing, because they suffered a crushing defeat in the recent elections.
Right.
I think it was, when was that? Last October?
Yeah, one, early October. Yeah, just immediately, like two months ago. Yeah.
Yeah. So and the other way. So they've managed to install right wing regimes by means of what, color revolutions, soft coups. An outright military coup in Bolivia just over the when was it, November the 10th?
Yeah, last month. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and also by sheer treachery in the case of Lenin Moreno in Ecuador, who's voted in on a popular platform, a progressive platform, and almost from day one did exactly the opposite. Very much allying himself with the right-wing elites in Ecuador, and obviously only too willing to serve as a tool of the United States. So among the areas that the Foro Sao Pablo have identified as being absolutely crucial to trying to stiffen and reinforce and actually develop in greater resistance to the current offensive by the United States and its government has been the a determination to try and combat the grossly unequal field of communications and psychological warfare, where the United States and its allies have a vast advantage in terms of resources and networks, well-equipped networks, by means of which they're able to attack and mount psychological attacks on whole populations, both by traditional means, TV channels, radio, but also by more modern means like social media, Facebook, Twitter, and they've developed very clear techniques that they're now applying, and in a clearly systematic way from one country to the next. They've done it with Venezuela, they've done it for 60 years with Cuba,
right?
And they did it in 2018 with Nicaragua. They've done it consistently in terms of demonizing really outstanding progressive leaders like Lula da Silva and Cristina Fernandez de Kirchner, people like Rafael Correa.
Right.
And the latest example has been this military coup in Bolivia on November the 10th. So, and what the Congress currently taking place in Caracas, in Venezuela, it's looking at how to put into practice and what to put into practice in order to meet that mandate that the people involved have received via from the Foro Sao Paulo to try and develop what they call a network of the peoples. A people's network and not a corporate network.
Right.
So the conference is only in its second day. It finishes tomorrow.
Right.
And there have been a series of working tables and a lot of preparatory work that went into the Congress, looking at how to develop social media, how to develop people's control of social media and people's input into social media.
Right.
And the uses of community radio, which is very, very, a very, very impressive force here in Venezuela.
Yep. It's an important one. I mean, it's an inexpensive, really the most inexpensive means of mass communication that exists. And it's also, the most difficult to thwart. I mean, you can jam radio, okay, but it's clear that it's being jammed. It's not the same as the kind of interference that takes place with all these digital, you know, materials where you can sort of censor things on a fine point, and people might not even notice that there's been censorship. They're receiving almost everything they were before. They're just subtle but very important changes. I want to point something out, because I'm looking at the the gathering of the media effort to deal with what's coming out of Washington right now, and it seems I don't know how representative Telesur is of this, okay, and we've had some conversations before about some questions that we've had about this or that aspect of the way Telesur covers things, but it appears that and I see this even with Cuban media, that there is a tendency to try to personalize the attacks that come from the United States to Trump and or the Republicans, as if throwing in on their side inside a struggle in the United States would change the behavior of the United States in the middle even of any of these projects. And I want to tell you from the inside here that that is completely wrong. First of all, the group that is driving this in the Congress includes, from my area here, Bob Menendez, who's a Democratic senator, okay? And he represents inside that power people like the Clintons, the whole Democratic Party establishment, Chuck Schumer, all of those people. That's who Bob Menendez represents. And looking at the impeachment report against Trump, for example, what does that reveal about what's going on in the United States? I'm looking at that at Telesur. While they are attempting to remove Trump, it must be noted that they're trying to remove him over his inclination to not go to war with Russia.
Right.
And what that means, I know what just happened in Bolivia. I know what's been happening against Cuba and in Nicaragua and all of this. But we also know that this was going on January 19th, 2017. You know, that these, half of the or more than half of the sanctions that were imposed, that are imposed now, were imposed during Obama and or Bush and or Clinton's time, except for Cuba, of course, since going back to Kennedy. And that, so tell people there that the policy can't be to throw in on one side or the other here. People in the United States, if they want a solidarity action from people in the United States, they need to be calling for people to tell the United States to leave the region alone, no matter who is in power.
Yeah, and people here are very well aware of that. Good. Although I think you're right, there have been some campaigns like No More Trump, for
right.
example.
Yeah, which is...
As if that would make any difference,
right?
And I think you're right to say that among some people there may be a certain naivety as regards that.
Right.
But among the people who are the real strategists who are planning all this stuff, they have no illusions.
Good.
They understand that the deep psychological warfare that has been engaged in order to create create the kind of passive acceptance among people in North America and Western Europe
right.
of absolutely insane propositions.
Horrible.
Like the United States is a force for good in the world.
I know. It's too absurd for words.
But they've been very successful in that.
I know. It's true.
And one of the reasons that they've been successful is because their strategists 50 years ago set out to do programming that constantly reinforced the idea that America is good, that America is morally superior. All these messages
right.
that are drummed into people all their lives from the time they slip out of their mother's womb.
Right.
And for example, one example, and there's so many examples, but one example of the way the media manipulates things is that apparently at the time of the launch of Sputnik back in 1957 or whenever it was,
right, right.
The U.S. authorities and the military authorities in particular were spooked by that, and their reaction was to one of the measures that they took was that they issued a norm, a kind of regulation, that every program, even porn movies, have to have some symbol representing the United States. In them, you know, and whether it be a flag, whether it be a uniform, just constantly reinforcing
right.
the institutional presence of the United States military, the United States as an entity yep. in people's consciousness.
Yep.
And so, and that's one example. Another example is that, for example, when Sesame Street came out. I know perhaps people might not agree with this interpretation, but one of the speakers at the working tables here pointed out that from his point of view, the Sesame Street was a way of convincing people of color, black people, Hispanic people, people and Native Indian people that that there was in fact a happy society,
right.
and it was perfectly normal for a white child to have a black child as a bosom buddy, and you know that everything was lovey-dovey and you know happy, when in fact outside in the real world, and the very opposite was the case.
Right.
And they use that, they use Sesame Street as an example of the way that this cultural indoctrination creates people who are predisposed to believe anything
right.
that they read, to believe that they read in the New York Times, in the Washington Post, that they hear on CNN or watch on CNN or MSNBC or whatever. So that, and that there's a 50-year-long or longer now, 70 years, of deliberate cultural indoctrination, and that has been fine-tuned over the years. And
right.
that there was another wave of psychological an intensification of psychological kind of techniques from the 1970s onwards, to the point where that one analyst that was quoted at the workshop I attended pointed out that the techniques of torture have been shifted into the communications field, because what the torturer does is it tries to break down the resistance, the will, the identity of the torturer's victim.
Right.
Those techniques of psychologically breaking down people so that they actually install in their own minds a kind of owner that tells them what to do and what to think and what's all right to think and the limits of what they shouldn't go beyond in what they think.
Right.
And that whole set of techniques of taking an individual and turning them into a kind of passive, accepting victim who accepts the messages that are very comforting. Once their acceptance has been achieved, then you can then comfort them. Yeah. With a whole series of messages that make them feel all right, and that you know everything's safe, everything's well in the world,
right.
and that all those techniques have been systematically applied in North America and Western Europe, in particular by the entertainment industry, and people here pointed out that the news business isn't the main threat from the point of view of trying to roll back the media offensive, the psychological warfare offensives of the United States and its allies, and the main enemy is the entertainment industry.
Yes, that's right, that's right.
And so people are very well aware that they're not just dealing with you know some transitory president who happens to be this individual called Donald Trump at the moment.
Right.
They're actually dealing with a system that has strategically set out over many decades to create a situation in which they will prevail in any information war. And so Nicolas Maduro is a monster. Daniel Ortega is a monster. Evo Morales is a dictator.
Right.
and anything that contradicts that, any information that contradicts that. So, for example, the coup regime in Bolivia is an outright fascist regime,
right.
And an outright racist regime. And they've killed well over 30 people. I'm the official figure. I think the official death toll is around 34 or 35. But a lot more people have been killed in Bolivia than official death toll.
Yep.
And so you get a situation in which these people break into the houses of government figures, kidnap their children. They kidnap the minister for communications, tie him to a tree, and they film it all and they show it so that everybody in Bolivia can see what's happening. And it's terrifying.
Right.
And that is the object of this psychological blitzkrieg. They set out to terrify people, and that kind of stuns them for some days, and that then. It makes them very uncertain about what to do. Then that gives the right wing the initiative, the advantage.
Right.
They take full advantage of that because they've been planning it for years. And then by the time people eventually snap out of their passivity and their uncertainty, and all, like the people did in El Alto and in those that city in Cochabamba, I've forgotten its name,
right.
They're vulnerable to repression, and right. That's what happens. They get murdered, they get slaughtered by the army or the police.
Right. This is all of one cloth, a military action, basically. I mean, you have the psychological attack, you have the all these various tactical manifestations, but this is a military action that takes out a government and paralyzes the people, so they can't resist.
Yeah, and so. And what we've been looking at in the Congress is, well, what in practice can we do about that? And one of the things that we have to do, I'm sure that you get this question a lot from people in the States. And I think Kevin Zeese mentioned to me that it's something that him and Margaret Flowers and their colleagues, that popular resistance. Well, what can we do?
Right.
Well, one of the things that you can do is make a point of informing yourself and actually get into a network where you can spread the genuine information. The idea is that one of the ideas that people are looking at in the Congress is how to set up a set of networks exploiting the fact that, thanks to these incredible social media that are available now, which make it so easy to share photos and to share audio and,
right.
And similar material.
Right.
Each individual with their own has a kind of sub network. Say that you have a solidarity network in the United States of a few hundred people. Well, they're actually I'm sure you're very adept at this yourself, Don. I'm not. I'm hopeless at it. But you can actually network very effectively so that those few hundred people can be turned into many tens or even hundreds of thousands.
Well, at this moment, social media. What we're doing, I'm speaking with you while you're in Caracas. This will be airing over the next 24 to 36 hours all over California, Oregon, Washington, Wyoming, Ohio, Colorado, New York, New Jersey, basically across the United States. And then, of course, on the internet all over the world. I have 5,000 Facebook friends. It gets limited by the algorithms that Facebook is now applying that hides all of our work from each of us, but we have people in there, there's a couple of hundred that grab everything and spread it around. I'd be willing to say that there are hundreds of thousands or maybe even more that will hear this conversation, and that is within the realm of possibility for each person that hears this. And if you can do it, you should be doing it, by the way. Take a couple of hours tomorrow and spread this around, folks.
Yeah, fine. And that applies to all kinds of material.
That's correct.
The material that's being produced in Chile, for example, very short videos showing the sadistic cruelty of the police. Likewise in Bolivia, And there was a lot of material produced in Chile and in Bolivia and also now in Colombia during the protests in Colombia.
Right.
That can be shared. And so if people say to you, well, ooh, what can I do? Oh, that's what you can do, and get the information out and create your own network, deliberately set up an information network, right, into which you and your other members of the network feed information that they come across about the countries with whom they're in solidarity. Yep. And in this case, we're talking about Latin America and the Caribbean, but it should also apply, obviously, to Palestine, to Syria, and so on.
That's right, the whole world. To the entire world, really, yep.
Right. So there's that as an idea, and various ideas to reinforce that decision to diversify, strengthen, and extend networks. But also one of the interesting decisions that they've taken is that they're going to set up a university of communication with various campuses in Venezuela, in Cuba, in Nicaragua, and in Argentina. And the advantage of that is that they already have an institutional framework, because the people taking part in the Congress are either representatives of those universities or have very strong influence in those universities, and will be able to facilitate setting up that Latin American and Caribbean University of Communication, not in the traditional university sense of, well, there's a campus and you physically go there and you take your classes and so on, but they're making use of all the modern technologies to be able to bringing people who, sorry, Don, who empirically have a lot of experience, but could improve their activity and organize their activity better if they actually underwent a course of, I hesitate to call it professionalization, but a course to improve their skills.
Right, polishing their skills. Yes.
Yeah, to enhance their skills, enhance their knowledge, and so what the idea of that is, so at the same time as you're extending and improving the networks of that distribute the information, your distribution network, at the same time as you're doing that, you're taking steps to improve the content of the information that gets distributed. Now, I'm putting it very, very simply. And the whole thing has been analysed in a much more sophisticated way by the people who have designed the conference and participated in it. But one of the things that, or as speakers, as people giving presentations, but one of the things that I found particularly inspiring is that, and today, for example, we went and had the group photo of the people taking part, and you're talking about something like 1,300 people, and I think it's well over 1,000 people from something like 40 countries.
Wow.
And of all ages, all ethnicities, and it's just tremendously inspiring, Don, to have this tremendous anti-imperialist solidarity among peoples, all geared to achieving a very practical objective, namely to improve our ability to resist U.S. organized psychological warfare against our peoples. And obviously there's an enormous amount of work to be done.
And the timing, it couldn't be any better right now, especially with the pronouncements out of Washington. Well, we're out of time. Please stay in touch with us, and we'll report back to people as we hear more from you, Tony. Thank you, and I'm glad that we're there. Like, we have your eyes and ears on what's happening there, and this is a very important moment in this hemisphere, and I hope about, you know.
Thanks, Don. I'll try and get material up on the website and share with you.
And that's tortillaconsal.com, by the way.
That's
tortillaconsal.com.
Right.
And that's all the news we have for you right now.
Welcome, Don. Thanks
for Public Radio. I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.